Red wins a battle between Starfleets in the far future of Strand 2218. As the Great Gallumfrey lists planetward, raining escape pods, as battle stations wilt like flowers tossed into flame, as radio bands crackle triumph and swift skimmers swoop after fleeing void tails, as guns speak their last arguments into mute space, she slips away. The triumph feels stale and swift. She used to love such fire. Now it only reminds her of who's not there. She climbs up Threat, taking solace in the past. Red rarely seeks company with others of her kind. They are oddballs all, decanted after being found, at some point in their development, deviant. Or the most deviant of all, those who decanted themselves. They are not at peace and play in the celestial rose. They carve their bodies off. They introduce asymmetry. They would make this war, she thinks, if there were not a war already made for them to make. But she seeks company now, in one of the places she can always find it. Sun hammers the streets of Rome. A man with a lean face and a sharp nose and a laurel crown walks, attended, past the theater of Pompeii. Others intercept him, summon him inside. A crowd's waiting there, in the shadows. The senators, their servants, and others. "Have you," Red asks one of the others, "ever felt you're being followed? That commandant is spying on you?" One senator offers Caesar a petition. "Followed," says the man with the broken nose to her left. "By the enemy, sometimes. By the agency? If commandant wanted to spy on us, she could read our minds." Caesar waves off the petition, but the senators cluster close. "Someone's dogged my tracks," Red says, "but they're gone as soon as I think to catch them."
"Enemy agent," says the woman to her right.
"These are jaunts of my own, research trips, not counterplay. How would an enemy agent know where I was going?"
One senator draws a knife. He tries to stab Caesar in the back, but Caesar catches his hand.
"If it is, commandant," says the man with the broken nose, "why worry?"
She frowns.
"I would like to know if my loyalty is being tested."
The man whose hand has been caught shouts for help in Greek. Knives slither from senators' sheaths.
"That would defeat the purpose of the test," observes the woman. "Come on, we'll miss the fun."
She has a wide grin and a long blade. Caesar shouts some words, but they're lost in the din as the killers descend. Red shrugs and sighs and joins them. Their war holds few enough chances to cut loose, and she can't be seen to pass them up. Blood sticks to her hands. She washes them later, in another river, far away. Leaves are turning in the Ohio woods when the geese land. One departs from the flock to approach. Red ponders the fate of the last goose to bring her a letter and feels a moment's guilt. Twine loops the goose's neck, and from the twine hangs a pouch of thin leather. Her hands tremble as she opens the pouch. 6 seeds lie inside, tiny crimson teardrops with tinier numbers scratched into their surface, 1 through 6. On the leather, in an ink too blue for this continent or strand, handwriting she knows well, though she's only seen it once, traces, "Do you trust me?" She sits in the woods, alone. She does. Red trusts her so far down in the bone she has to ponder a long while to realize what distrust might imply, what these seeds might be, what they might do to her if she's wrong. She eats the first 3 seeds one by one. She should be sitting beneath the baobab tree, but she slumps under a buckeye instead, surrounded by spiked shells. As each letter unfolds inside her mind, she frames it in the palace of her memory. She webs words to cobalt and lapis. She weds them to the robes of Mary in San Marco frescoes, to paint on porcelain, to the color inside a glacier crack. She will not let her go. The third seed, with its 3rd letter, drops Red into a swoon. She wakes at a rustle of buckeye shells to find the last 3 seeds still clutched in her fist, but the leather bag missing. She hears footsteps in the wood and pursues them. A shadow darts before her, always out of reach, and then it's gone, and she falls panting to her knees in the empty wood.
Dear price greater than rubies, I have been needle-felting for my lover's sister's children, an owlet for one, a fawn for the other. Curious to use so delicate a tool for such savage work. You take a needle so fine you wouldn't feel it in your flesh, then stab it through a mess of roving over and over until the fibers settle into shape. I feel you, the needle of you, dancing up and down thread with breathtaking abandon. I feel your hand in places I've touched. You move so fast, so furious, and in your wake the braid thickens, admits fewer and fewer strands, while Garden scowls, thunderclaps, and bids me deepen my work. I like to think of all the ways I could have stopped you, were I so inclined. Sometimes I am inclined. Sometimes I sit here stationary, and I know you so swift and sure, and think, I must prove myself her equal again. And the sharp, electric ache to stop you just to see you admire me is a kind of needle, too. I have 6 months to fill before I can send this to you, so I am writing in pieces, parceling out the words I wish you to have, though you'll of course read them all at once. Or perhaps you won't. Perhaps you'll want to save these seeds to absorb at your leisure, perhaps even at the pace of my writing them. But why waste so much time? More dangerous to keep them on you, where they can be found. Better to read them all at once. At any rate, this staghorn sumac, not poisonous, delicious mixed into meats, salads, tobacco. Taste how tart it is, how tangy. Grind it into a spice to sprinkle or smoke, or soak the berry heads whole and get something like lemonade. These seeds, for you, are best eaten one at a time, rolled around your tongue and broken beneath your teeth. Yours, Blue. P.S. I love writing in aftertaste. P.P.S. I hope you noticed the difference between this sumac and the poisonous one. Only one of them is red. My dear sugar maple, we're tapping the trees, boiling sap down for syrup and hard candy. I like you to know, with my words in your mouth, the places and ways in which I think of you. It feels good to be reciprocal. Eat this part of me while I drive reeds into the depth of you. Spill out something sweet. I wish sometimes I could be less fierce with you. No, I feel sometimes like I ought to want to be less fierce with you. That this, whatever this is, would be better served by tenderness, by gentle kindness. Instead, I write of spilling out your sap guts with reeds. I hope you can forgive this. To be soft for me is so often pretense, and pretense does not come easily while writing to you. You wrote of being in a village upthread together, living as friends and neighbors do, and I could have swallowed this valley whole and still not have sated my hunger for the thought. Instead, I wick the longing into thread, pass it through your needle eye, and sew it into hiding somewhere beneath my skin. Embroider my next letter to you one stitch at a time. Yours, Blue. Dear Sailor's Delight, the snow's gone and everything is warming, as if the sun were knuckling into the earth with both hands and kneading it into release. Planting time on the horizon, and I take this phrase and turn it over, smile at how garden seeds time, makes time a planting more subtle than desert seasons, and the horizon is a promise. I have waited until now to address your concern about shadows. I have paid careful attention. There was a time, earlier in our correspondence, when I was absolutely certain of being trailed. Little things, faint, difficult to name. But you know the feeling of walking into a room where someone has recently been and left? Like that, but in reverse. Never followed, quite, but trailed. But I've not felt this since being embedded, which may be cause for concern. When Garden embeds an agent, As I'm sure your commandant has noticed, they are near impossible to approach, indistinguishable from their surroundings, so thoroughly enmeshed in the fabric of strands that to cut us out would tear unsightly holes through which chaos pours. Chaos no one down thread wants, not even your oracle, who lives and breathes the stuff. Too unpredictable, too difficult to manage, the cost-benefit all askew. So you catch us on the move, in between, while we're dancing the braid as well, touching lives only lightly. Even Garden has difficulty reaching us with the more nuanced branches of their consciousness. To be an agent out of time and approach someone embedded, you'd need to practically wear their skin before the braid would allow you within 50 years or 1,000 miles of their position. You'll ask, but how are you able to send me letters in the contents of birds' stomachs? Think of birds as a comms channel I can open and close seasonally. Fellow operatives relate their work to me at the equinoxes. Garden blooms more brightly in my belly. There's enough traffic that it's a simple matter to disguise incoming and outgoing correspondence, misdirect, hide in plain sight. Enemy agents, though. I've heard stories of what happens to those of your side who try to push through to one of our plantings. Imagine walking through a thorn hedge that grows thicker, harder, sharper the more you push into it, and you'll have something of what it's like. But for acres, for decades, until you're ribboned and rent into tinsel. All this to say, I'm not being followed. If you are, I'll send out what feelers I can to see if it's my people. It may well be. Garden's clearly been interested in you since you were small. But I've every confidence in your ability to evade and outmaneuver anyone from my side. Anyone who isn't me. If it's your people, that's more complicated and troubling. Be careful. Yours, Blue. P.S. Any information you can give me about the quality of shadow, a scent, a qualifying color of feeling, the nightmare you woke from after you thought yourself safe, will help me investigate. Though I suppose I never did learn if you dream.